Oh, dear God, use me today as an instrument of your mercy and of your peace. And allow me to help someone in this room tonight. And God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. My name is Milt Waring, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Newberg Group in Cleveland, Ohio, and I want to congratulate you people on this fine gathering that you got here today, and I want to thank you for asking me to be here. I've heard some wonderful speakers, and I've met some wonderful people, and it's been lovely. I'm sure that if I would have been sober 3 months or even 3 years, I wouldn't have got up and said, I'm new. I've lied. I don't know, because the fear was so great and the pride was so tremendous and I know you'd have taken advantage of me because I didn't know what was going on. So I would have lied. And that pride and that fear are two of the things that kept me captive long after I was freed from alcohol. Possibly one of the most important things I can tell you about my drinking, and I believe it is the most important thing, is that if I had the power to stop drinking on my own, I'd have never come to Alcoholics Anonymous. That simple. Why would I come to some place that's going to teach me to stop drinking if I can stop drinking on my own? I am powerless over alcohol. I'm a drunk. I made a decision to stop drinking in January the 15th of 1970. The fact that I made that decision in the city jail had nothing to do with the decision. If there's anything I can tell you about jail, it's I jailed well. I did good in jail. I never missed a meal. Never missed a meal. So if it wasn't jail that prompted me to stop drinking, and it wasn't, and believe me, it wasn't hospitals that stopped me from drinking, although I went to a lot of them too, and it wasn't beatings because I took a lot of them. What was it? The fact is that I had lost control of my life. And I knew, I lost control of my life long before January the 15th. I just didn't know it. I didn't know how out of control my life was. I liked to drink, and I really did, and I dedicated everything to that. I didn't waste my youth on growing up. I didn't bother with jobs. I don't think I bought anything worth over 50 bucks in my life at that time, So when I tell you that I like to drink, some of my best drinking was on benders. I like to get off on drunks, some of them months long. And I was on one of these drunks at the end of 69 somewhere, or November maybe, and things happened so quickly that I couldn't control them really. I lost the ability to sleep at night. I would drink 16 or 18 or 20 hours and then lay down and I would wake up and I would be sweating and shaking, and I didn't understand that. And that's the progression of alcoholism. It progressively got worse for me. I would not eat a meal, and that's unusual for me. I would hit the bar rooms and after a few weeks on this drunk, all I could eat was Smokies and chips. And I would put some ketchup on that, and that was a breakfast of champions. I had it all figured out. And I lost the ability to change my clothes. Now what I mean is that I had clothes to change into. It's just that I would get home at 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning and lay down with my clothes on, planning to change my clothes in the morning, and I already told you I'm up, I'm down, I'm sweating profusely, and I would just at 5:30 when the bars opened up, rush out the door to get a drink, and that went on for quite some time, and I lost the ability to take a bath. Now I had a tub. I just couldn't get into it, you know, and I was a drunk, and what I'm telling you is I needed a drink more than I needed a bath. I was a drunk, and I needed a drink more than I needed to change my clothes. I mean, the need for a drink was greater than my personal hygiene and my ability to sweat. I mean, I lost it all. I really gave it all up, and I seen it. See, I seen it happening. I would go weeks without changing my clothes, and you didn't have to ask who it was. I knew who it was. I knew, and I couldn't stop that. I was confused a lot. I didn't drink and black out. I would drink and get confused. I drank until I was like a sponge. I couldn't get any more in me, and it would run out of my pores. And I would smell myself, and I would lose track of what I was doing. I'd be standing there talking with a couple of guys, and I'd be holding the conversation, and the guy said, "Well, what do you think?" Well, I had the answer to that question. I knew the answer to that. I had an opinion on that, and I just couldn't get it out, you know. And I would organize my thoughts, and I would bring it all in, and I would blurt the answer out. It'd be 15 minutes later, there's three topics away from what I'm talking about over here. And I said, "Hey, get up and leave." and I would be standing there, and I would look down at the bathroom, and I would know I would have to go to the bathroom, and I would lose track of that thought, and I would just look down, and I had wet my pants, and this is not how I had been drinking for years. This is how the drinking had progressed. And I already told you I wasn't taking a bath, and I already told you I wasn't changing clothes, and I'm held in the grips of alcoholism, and I don't know what to do. I have on more than one occasion on this drunk, tipped my whiskey glass over and walked out the door and said, "That's it, you know, that's it. Now, this argument that I'm having is with me. There's no one else to discuss with, and so I'm holding this conversation verbally with myself, and I walk out the door, and then I would walk back in because there was nothing I could do but drink. But in the front of my mind, I knew that when I got off the drunk, I would not drink no more. In the front of my mind. Now, I knew that I couldn't just, like, get off the drunk. I was done drinking when I was done drinking. It wasn't a matter of my own circumstances. It was a matter of external circumstances. I never drank intelligently. I tell you honestly, if I could have drank 500 gallons of whiskey a day, I would have drank 500 gallons of whiskey a day. I drank to capacity. I drank to capacity. I never drank more on Saturday than I did on New Year's Eve. You might have bought more on New Year's Eve, but I always drank to capacity. At the end of this drunk that I'm talking to you about, they did me a favor, really. They picked me up and they put me in the cell, in the felony tank instead of the drunk tank. And they refused to charge me. They didn't know if the guy was going to live or die. They didn't know what was going to happen. They just held me on a suspicion charge for 3 days. They put me in this cell and without whiskey for 3 days, and in 3 days I dried out. Well, I'll give you this. I come off hard. I always come off hard, but they were mad at me. They didn't bring me a bologna sandwich and a cup of coffee for breakfast, and they didn't bring me a salami sandwich with a little cheese for lunch and a cup of coffee, and they didn't bring me nothing for supper. The 3 days I didn't eat, and for 3 days I was in a cell, and I come off of this horrendous drunk, and there was nothing in the cell but a steel cot and a dongle. And I had the heaves and the runs and the dry heaves just like every other drunk I got off of, and hot pipes, and that meant I had to kneel down and drink from the toilet I had just gone in. And I'll tell you, if there's anything that just really cements it in my mind as I'm sitting in this cell and I'm shaking and I'm coming apart, is that this will never happen to me again. This will never happen to me again. I drew up a plan in there. I had gotten my will back from the bottle. I had gotten it back. I had control of my life now. And I knew that. I felt it. I felt that I was over this drunk. You just intuitively know these things. When the drunk is over, you know it's over. And I got off the drunk, and I drew up this little plan of sobriety here, because I knew I was never going to drink again, and I was going to have to make a few adjustments in my life, And I looked around to see what I should do, and I just knew that I should get a job and go to work every day. Now that's two different things. Getting a job and going to work every day are two different things. I have a lot of jobs. I can go to work every day. I see no sense in working 5 days if I only needed a 3-day pay. If I ran a little short, well, I just steal your coat. I was going to get a job and go. I looked at these guys that I hung around with. You know, I'm sitting in this cell and I looked at these guys I hung around with, and I said to myself, you know, these guys got married. And they quit this drinking. You know, they quit this drinking. My mom always used to say, find a nice girl and settle down. Now they're all in AA. You figure it out now. So these guys would get married and they would get kids and houses and cars and educations. And I felt that was what I needed, get some responsibility. Now, that's a joke. I couldn't take care of a gerbil. How could I possibly take care of a relationship? I'm not sure I can take care of a gerbil today. So I felt that this is what I needed, and now I had a Polack neighbor, and that guy used to go bowling 4 or 5 times a week, and the cops was never at his house, and they were always coming to my house, and I never seen his refrigerator fall through his kitchen window, and mine did, and I never seen him throw his couch out his living room window, and I did, so I felt I would go bowling. Now the only reason I tell you this story is because I hated bowling as much as I hated work. but I have proven to myself that I have a sincere desire to stay sober. I have proven to myself that I have a willingness to do things I don't like to do in order to stay sober. Oh, I'll give you this, that those are stupid things now. But that was the extent of my mental capacity. I had underestimated the enemy. I had no idea what I had. And I tell you honestly, as I look back, I think that program would have been okay. I think it would have been okay. There is one problem with that program, and it's a big problem, and that is I was the power. It was the I Say So program. Now, I don't know if I thought I had ingrown toenail or what. I don't know what I thought I had, but I certainly didn't know I had alcoholism, and I underestimated the enemy. I really had no idea. It would always been, I said so. And that's all it needed to be said was, I said so. And this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, we must quit playing God. Makes sense to me. If I was powerful enough, why would I just depend on God? If I had enough strength, why would a guy like me hang around with a bunch of guys like you? Why would I? There ain't no reason in the world. This is a cultural exchange here as far as I'm concerned. There is no way in the world I would. But I need you. See? I'm dumb, but I ain't stupid. I know I need you. So you got the idea. I mean, you got the idea that I've got a plan. I got a whole deal, and it's going to work, and I know it's going to work because I said so. I walked out of that cell, and I followed through with that plan that I just told you about. I went on, I got a job, and I went to work every day, and I got the responsibilities, and I bought a Bulma. Actually, I stole the Bulma. And if that program would have worked, I wouldn't be here today. There would be no reason for me to be here today. And you know, you laugh when you say those things, but really, how many times have you walked into a meeting and they sign you up for an AA dance? Or an AA golf league? Or an AA, whatever it is? I don't know. I read that book and I don't see that in there. Those are nice things, and I'm not saying they're not. I'm saying that book gives me 12 steps of recovery. Recovery. Recovery from the fear. Recovery from the pride.
that are going to take me back to drinking.
Okay, so I walk out and I put this program into action. I attack this world. I attack alcoholism. Oh, I'll give you this. I'll give you this. That I was like the tiger in the cage. Did you ever see a tiger in the cage? That guy walks like this. This is not a happy animal. See? The book says we are restless, irritable, and awfully upset until we can once again experience that euphoria of the first drink. Let me assure you, I was restless, irritable, and really upset. Really. I had no idea how to live sober. I was trapped. I spent all my life. Who would think I would live to be 30? I wasn't prepared. Well, I was 24 and I was ready to check out. I live fast, die young, and all of that stuff. Hell, now that I'm sober, I'm lost in this sober world, and everything is wrong. Nothing is right because I don't know how to live. I really don't know how to live. And I'm lost inside this. And no matter what, this is better than wetting my pants. Now, that's what I tell you. If being restless, irritable, and discontented is what I got to settle for in sobriety, then I'll take that because that's better than drinking my own puke out of a toilet bowl. If that's all that sobriety has to offer me, I'll take it. And I tell you honestly, if that's all you got in this room tonight, you're cheating yourself. Because Alcoholics Anonymous has given me the ability to live my life in peace, to live my life in happiness and joy. And if all I settle for is sobriety, I'm cheating myself. Pure unadulterated sobriety will do this to you. Make you drink again. Oh, I'm not saying that because you told me that. I'm not saying that because that's in the book, and it is, and you did. I'm telling you that because I did. I drank again. I drank again for one reason and one reason only. I was an alcoholic, and I was doing absolutely nothing at all about my alcoholism. I was doing something about my finances. I was doing something about my relationships. I was doing something about my recreation, and I wasn't doing anything at all about the worst problem I had, alcoholism. That's like putting a tuxedo on a pig. You dressed me up. I got cleaned up and dressed up and washed up, but I haven't changed anything on the inside. Nothing. Nothing. The end result, I already told you, is I had to get drunk. I had a sincere desire to stay sober. I had a willingness to do anything that was needed to do. I just didn't know what to do, and I didn't know where to go because I didn't know what I had. I got in the car with a couple of guys. They said, "You want a beer?" Well, I never gave it a thought. I didn't think to myself, well, I shouldn't take this drink. I never thought I can drink now. I ain't had a drink in a month. It never crossed my mind. There are times when I have no mental defense against the first drink. There are times, no, I don't need the book to tell me that. Oh, the book tells me that. And I don't need you to tell me that, although you have told me that. I learned it everything. Just like I learned everything, I learned it the hard way. I drank. Guy said, "You want a beer?" And I took the beer. I take the drink takes the drink, and the drink takes the man. I take the drink, and I have absolutely no say-so over what I'm going to do next. I have lost control of my life. I have once again taken my will and turned it over to the care of alcohol. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a step and says, take this will, this freedom from the drink, while you have it, and give it to God. That's what the book says. Because on my own, I'm going to waste my will. I'm going to squander it. I'm going to throw it away, and I'm going to give it back to alcoholism. The third step of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me what to do with the will. To give it to God, and He'll take care of me. You see, you and I can walk into any basement and pull a drunk out. You and I can walk into any gutter in Ventura or Los Angeles or Cleveland. You and I can walk in any gutter and pull the drunk out. Put them in the treatment center. Take them, whatever we want to do, you and I can do that. But only God can reach back in the neck of a jug of whiskey and bring the will out and give it back to us. Only God can do that. And He does that continuously. What we do with it is our business, isn't it?
What we do with it?
Me? No idea about God. I had no idea there was a power. I was the power.
You see, the book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, being convinced of three pertinent ideas. A, that we are alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. Got that part. I got that. I ain't got no trouble with that. B, that no human power could have relieved my alcoholism. Come on. Come on. You talk about human power, you're talking about me. If I can't do it, who can? I'm the baddest guy I know. Being convinced, it says. This he has the way of convincing a guy like me. Let me assure you that. Okay, so now I drink again. I drink again, and I'll tell you what happens to me. When I take a drink, something happens to me that doesn't happen to the rest of the world, and that something is the thing that separates you and I from them, called the phenomenon of craving. See, they don't experience that. You've heard it from this podium many, many, many times tonight, this weekend. They sip the drink. It makes me sick. It makes me crazy. They sip the drink. They put the drink down because they don't have the phenomenon of craving. You give me a drink, and I have no say-so over what happens to me. There's something happens in me that I need to drink some more, no matter what the expense, no matter how much strength or force or will that I have. You give me a drink, and I am powerless. Powerless over alcohol. So I don't have to deal today, and haven't had for some years, with that horrifying phenomenon of craving. I don't have to even give it a thought, because that phenomenon of craving cannot take place in my life unless I take the first drink. It's the root of the problem. The problem is not the phenomenon of craving. The root, of course, is the first drink. Don't take the first drink. One of the popular things that used to be big when I was sobering up was, it's the train, it's the engine that kills you, not the caboose. It's the first one. What are they talking about? I don't get it, you know. And I wouldn't walk up like one of these guys. I'd sit in the back and say, I look like one of them little dogs you see in the back of a window of a car. My head would be not like this, and no, like one of these balloons, just full of hot air, just not making, not getting anything. Okay, now I got off of that drunk, and I was sick, and I had hurt someone as usual. I was sick, and all of the stuff that went with it was really nothing new. If there was anything new, it was absolute shock and surprise that I drank again, because I said I would never do that. Just shocked. I couldn't believe it. There was no one more surprised than me that I drank. I mean, I was just shocked. Couldn't believe it. Hell, I made promises. I got a job. You hire me, I'll show up. And the guy took a chance. I have broken many hearts. I have betrayed many trusts. And not because I was a rotten guy, although I was, but because I was an alcoholic. I've done things I didn't want to do. Many times hurt people that I wanted to hurt. Many times told lies I just wanted to tell. But I'm dealing with alcoholism now in the progressed stages, and I'm doing things I don't want to do. Lying when I don't mean to lie, I meant it when I said it. Certainly wouldn't hurt a soul. So I got off of this drunk, and I knew that game plan didn't work, so I'm going to draw up a new game plan, because I knew this for sure, that if I hadn't have gotten a car with them guys, I wouldn't have drank, so it's their fault. So I'm not going to hang around with them guys no more. Now that is a good decision. They was not nice guys, first of all, and my mom told me when I was 14 years old, she said, Melody, don't hang around with them guys, because they're going to get you in trouble. Now, my mom had a rare form of honesty, don't you know, because by the time I was 17, she was telling them guys, don't you hang around with my Melody, he's going to get you in trouble. Didn't stop her from loving me, but she knew the truth, huh? Okay. I'm 24 years old now, I'm going to finally do what my mom wants me to do. I'm not going to hang around with them guys. Now, that is a good decision if it wasn't for one small factor, and the factor is this. I was vulgar, foul-mouthed, abusive, abrasive, the cheap chisel and mooch.
I had no respect for you, for your family, or your personal property, and that does not endear me to others. I had eliminated 99% of the people I've ever met in my life for those attributes that I just described to you. Consequently, I'm left with a small handful of friends, and believe me, they were the best friends a guy like me could have at that time. They really were. And I'm going to let them go now. The only friends that I got. Not because I'm mad at them, but because I have a sincere desire to stay sober and a willingness to do anything I have to do in order to stay sober. And if I think my drinking is their fault, they're gone. They're gone. Now, I want to talk to you for just a minute about lonely. See, lonely is a funny thing. See, I know a lot about being alone. There's not ever one joint, one penitentiary, one workhouse, one lockup that I've ever been into that I didn't go to the hole. Not one. I always got in trouble while I was in trouble. I was just what I did best, I suppose. And consequently, and I always went hard. They'd strip me naked because they'd want to punish me, and they put me on the outside wall, which is the cold wall, and you know all of this stuff. And I have gone on more than one occasion, for weeks at a time without not talking to another human being, without physically seeing another human being. I've gone weeks at a time with the only voice you hear are the ones that echo down the hall. So when I tell you really about loneliness, it's not that kind, because I did that okay. I'm talking about walking in the Tremend Lounge where there's 75 or 80 people in the room. I know 50 of them. I went to school since elementary school with 40 of them, and I couldn't talk to any of them. I couldn't bring myself to communicate with any of them. I couldn't express to them how I felt. I couldn't tell them that I'm battling this whiskey. I can't stop drinking. Things are going on. I don't know what to do. Could we talk? I just couldn't do that. I'm telling you about being alone in a room full of people. A loneliness I'd never experienced before. And I didn't know what to do about it. A fear has set into my life that I don't know what to do with. I was always an attacker. I attacked fears. I attacked everything. Everything I felt that was worthwhile was worth attacking. And I've got these fears that I can't attack. I'd sit on the side of my bed at 6 o'clock in the morning. And I'd be rocking on the side of my bed. You know, I'd be so confused because I don't know what to do about this drink problem. And I don't want to step out the door. I'm afraid to walk out of the door of my own house. I'm afraid. I just got fears that I can't describe to you that owns me. You know, they give us an inventory step and they say, let's examine our fears. What? Well, of course, let's examine our fears. Because once I put the sunlight on the spirit, the great majority of my fears melt. Like snow in the sunshine, they were unfounded and unreal. And the ones that are real, we'll deal with. The ones that aren't real, give them up. I didn't want them, and those are the fears that held me captive. Those are the ones that owned me, that prevented me from talking and communicating and serving and opening up. Those are the fears I brought into Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the fear and the pride that would have allowed me to walk up and say, I'm a new guy. I don't know nothing. Hopelessness set into my life, a hopelessness that's very difficult for me to describe. You see, I never had a lot going for me, but I always had a lot of hope. I never had a lot of money, a lot of good looks, a lot of talent, a lot of skills, a lot of anything, but I always had a lot of hope. I remember being 14 years old and I'd gather up the 8 and the 9-year-olds and I'd put them on my football team and would challenge the other 14 and 15-year-olds. Come on, line up, we can do it, we can do it, full of hope, loaded with hope. I remember walking in the wishing well, 21 years old, up on 79th and Broadway. A guy stopped me at the door and said, no, don't go back there. He said, there's 50 guys back there that are going to beat the snot out of you. Man, I threw my coat off and I flew back there. You looking for me? And they did beat the snot out of me. But I had hope. I had hope. Come on, let's go. We can do it. Full of hope. No brains. Just a lot of hope. I'm 24 years old and I am hopeless. I am 24 years old and I see no light at the end of the tunnel. I'm 24 years old and I see no way this continue on. I see nothing I can do about it. I'm held in the grips of alcoholism and I don't know what's wrong with me and I can't stop the pain. I just can't stop the pain of the hopelessness and the despair. There's two kinds of drunks nobody likes. Nobody likes fighting drunks and nobody likes weeping drunks. And I spent my whole life being a fighting drunk and now I'm a broken down, hopeless, weeping drunk. I'd get out of that work, I'd have my time clock in my hand at 25 after 3 and I'd say to myself, I'm going to go home and do something, fix something, nail something, hit that time clock. I'd run out the door, drive in that old Rambler, I'd pull in the back of the joint and stop in and get a shooter. And I tell you, I didn't plan it. I'm telling you, I'd be lowering that whiskey glass from my lips to the bar and I'd know that I took that drink. I'm telling you that I took that drink without intelligently, without reason, without anything, except that I'm an alcoholic, and I have no mental defense over the first drink. If it wasn't for the grace of God, I'd be drunk today. There ain't no other way of getting out of it. No human power could have relieved our alcoholism, and I'm about to convince myself of that. I put the drink down, and I was like, oh, just what is the matter with me? How could I do this? It's almost like the bit. It's really... Really, when they wrote those stories in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, they knew I was coming. They put my name on those pages after page after page. They just knew this one's from LDN, and this one's from LDN, and this one's from LDN. They knew it. They just knew it. And then I'd get so lonely and I'd get so remorseful and something set in. It's the most destructive state I hate to even talk about called self-pity. Self-pity. I'd walk down to Tremendous and I'd be half in the bag and I'd feel so bad and nobody loves me. I'd be snotting all over the guy's sleeve and his shirt and everything. Now they know me as a fighting drunk, so they ain't going to say nothing. I'd be snotting all over them and they ain't going to just sit there and take it. And I wouldn't black out. I'd remember. And then remorse would set in and I'd be ashamed of myself and humiliated, if you will. I don't think I knew what shame was. And I would promise myself I'm not going back. And it went on just like this. The hopelessness got greater. The despair, as the hopelessness turned into a state of despair, which is an ungodly state in the first place. And I just was lost. It just was lost. You know, before my dad died, he had tremendous arthritis. I mean, he couldn't move his hands, he couldn't walk, he couldn't anything. And they made him a promise that on October the 13th, they were going to replace all of the joints with plastic. They were going to take away the pain. And I tell you, my dad lived for October the 13th. He just lived for that. No more pain. We saw October and he'd be waiting. Everything was for that day. And I'm going to tell you the secret. You want to know what the secret is? For the alcoholic in the progressed stages of alcoholism, there ain't no October the 13th. There ain't no day when the pain is going to go away. It's something I got to live with forever. I stood before a judge in April of May 1970. That judge pounded on that thing. He said, I find you guilty of shooting with intent to kill an officer of the law, and I sentence you 120 years. Now, I'll tell you this. By the time I got before that judge, there was nothing he could do to hurt me. There was no new pain he could inflict upon me. There was nothing he could do to hurt me that alcoholism and my own selfishness hadn't already done to me. I stood before that judge a beaten man. I stood before that judge just absolutely hopeless. And without even a fear of the penitentiary, hell, I'd done time. I did well. I told you that. I wasn't worried about the time. It's that I just didn't know what to do about my drinking. He pounded on the thing and he put the cuffs on. They dragged me out and there's a long stories of other people and tears and broken hearts and promises that every one of us has experienced that at one stage or another, or you will if you continue to drink. I mean, that's alcoholism. I sat in the cell and I was in the county jail waiting to go down and I sobered up in that cell. See, the day before, the guys got together and they had a going away party for me, like I was leaving for the army or college or something. I don't know. And I drank and sobered up in that cell and I sobered up with all of the guilt and all of the remorse and all of the self-pity that I've always sobered up with at the end, you know, at the end, that kind of stuff. And it's not unusual, emotions and feelings is you read the paper, I don't know if they even put it in the paper out here, but you go to Cleveland and you read in between the lines of the paper, a guy hangs himself on a simple DWI charge, a guy takes his shoestrings and instead of waiting for the bondsman, he rides his shoestrings out and a simple charge was an intox charge. I mean, those are the things that I understand, you see. I understand that there is so much hopelessness and so much despair at moments in our life where there does not seem any way that we can continue on. There does not seem any way that I want to pay the price facing people again. I have to go through it again. I understand that completely. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says there are those who make the supreme sacrifice rather than fight again. And I'm telling you, that day in that cell, I'd had enough. I don't mind taking a beating, but not forever. I don't mind being a loser, but not forever. I don't mind no things, but not forever. And I see no way this was ever going to change for me. This was going to go on forever, because I got an awakening in that cell. And the awakening was this. I'm not in here because I squeezed the trigger. I'm in here because I drank. Drink trouble. Drink trouble. Never put the two together. Never seen myself dozens and dozens of times sobering up in the cell. Never seen it. Never put drink trouble together. Never got that. I'm sitting in this cell on this bit and I got the idea. I'm in here because I drank. And I tell you what I got. If I'm in here because I drank and just did everything I could in order to stop drinking and was a failure, then if I do 1, 5, 10 of the whole 20, when I get out of here, I'm going to drink again. And when I drink again, I'm going to come back again. And that's how simple it is. Forever. This pain, this despair, this loneliness and this fear is going to be my companion forever. And I did something in that cell in that moment of despair that was more against my nature than suicide, more against my will than taking my own life. And I say it's the toughest thing I'd ever done up to this point, and it was surrender. No human power could have relieved my alcoholism in that day, in that cell, in that county jail. I knew that. I was convinced that there was nothing that could be done about my alcoholism.
See, Bill Wilson talks about the moment of surrender in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. He said he was lifted out of his room and put on top of a mountain in the wind of truth or something where the spirit of freedom was blowing by. He said he had a spiritual experience. And I'm here today to tell you that that day in that cell, in that moment of total surrender, and it was total, I had a spiritual experience. Oh, I don't mean I was lifted out of that cell. Light come on or nothing, you know. I mean that I believe that God works through people. I believe He works through you and through the committee and through Rick and his wife and everybody that's up there. I believe He works through people. Because that day in that cell, in that moment of total surrender, when the prayer was a cry of sheer desperation, in that moment, God sent me a message. And the messenger was another convict. I was sitting in that cell ready to grasp at anything I could grasp at because I had run out. And two bunks away from me, there's a guy talking to another guy about a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was close enough to hear the conversation. He's telling this guy, he said, man, if you ever been busted for DWI or drunk and disorderly public intox, join the program called Alcoholics Anonymous. I was close enough to hear the conversation. The conversation was Alcoholics Anonymous. I got the message. And a messenger was a convict. As a matter of fact, the messenger was a murderer. He just killed a guy. He's ready to be a McNugget in another couple of months. They're going to fry that guy. Who's gonna believe that guy? See, from here on in, I tell you, it's a matter of divine intervention. And I don't care if you're in the treatment center, I don't care if you're in this room, I don't care if you're in your living room. It's a matter of divine intervention when the messenger appears.
The messenger was a murderer. He was also a convict, and that means he was a liar. And I knew he was a liar while he was a convict. I know how to do time. You lie to me for 20 minutes, I'll lie to you for 20 minutes, we'll lay down, take a little nap, we'll come back and start all over again. I mean, that's how you do time. I've done time, I know how to do time. There's no reason in the world for me to believe this guy. Alcoholics Anonymous, that's the first time those words have ever caressed my mind. Alcoholics Anonymous, first time. In the state of divine intervention, I'm telling you, I believe this guy even though he was a liar. Why would I believe this guy? Why? What? He's got no credentials. 1992, they like to have credentials. They bring people with credentials. Hell, if Betty Ford would have walked into my cell and said, let me talk to you about AA, I'd have bought that, huh? You know, who would I believe that? Well, she was still sucking wine in 70. But you know what I mean. You know what I mean. Send me Kitty Dukakis, really. Any girl drinks rubbing alcohol is my date. That's my date. Yeah. Hey, come on, we'll stop at the hardware store and get a bottle. Yeah. So God sends me this one with no credentials, and what I'm trying to tell you is this, the truth is the truth, even if a liar speaks it. The grace that God's given me is to recognize the truth. The guy spoke the truth, and I recognize the truth. The truth is Alcoholics Anonymous. That is the truth, and it comes in the mouth of a liar. Gold is gold. If it's in the garbage can of Fort Knox, it's still gold. It doesn't change. The truth doesn't change. It can stand unsupported, and God gave me the grace to recognize the truth, and the truth is Alcoholics Anonymous. That is the truth. What I do with the truth is really, it's my program now. It's the ball's in my court. What I do with the truth, what you do with the truth is up to you. It's up to you. It was up to me. I didn't know what I had in my hands. I had no idea what was happening to me in my life. All I knew was that Alcoholics Anonymous seemed to be the place to go and the thing to do. That's all I knew, and I had no reason to believe that if it wasn't for the divine intervention of God, the grace that God has given me. Just the grace. Just the grace. And he's given to every one of us. I got down to the penitentiary and I sent him a kite, a letter. I said, I want to join Alcoholics Anonymous. He sent me one back and said, not you. See, there's something you must know about my personality. I'm a three-inning ball player. I don't finish anything. I start everything. Finish nothing. It's just the way I was. It's just the way I was. I just start stuff and not finish it. It gets a little tough. I didn't follow through. I tried something else. Well, if they don't want me, big brothers. Big brothers. Big brothers. If you don't want me, I'll join CC, Cons for Christ. I mean, we had the whole alphabet. I could have gone anywhere. Anywhere. Here's the grace of God in action. The grace of God is this. It pushes my will. It gives my will a little push. When I want to quit a trade, I keep pushing, trying a little harder. That's the grace for a guy like me. I'm doing things I wouldn't normally do. Instead, I wasn't there long enough. I had to get out of quarantine. When I got out of quarantine, I shot him another letter, a kite. I said, I want to join Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, come here, we'll give you a test. Test. A lot of people hear test, they think study. I hear test, I think cheat. That's just the way it is. I just am a cheat. I'm a cheat. I just cheat. I went in to take the test. The convicts that were giving the test was from Cleveland. I said, hey, how you doing? Hey, everything good to see you. Yes, you know, we used to talk about homes and homeboys and that stuff in the penitentiary years and years and years ago. Now the people in the street are trying to talk like the people in the penitentiary. Figure it out. Doesn't make no sense. When we start our little homeboy shuffle stuff, how you doing, little Steve? How's everything going? All right, good, all right. I said, hey, what's the answer to this one? Where are you from? You from the West? Oh, I love that. I hated the West. I love the West Side. How do you know so-and-so? So what's the answer to this one? I was sober 11 years on my anniversary. I was telling the story at a midnight meeting at 2 o'clock in the morning. The guy in the back of the room jumped up and said, that was me! That was me that gave the answers! He was sober 9 months. I had 11 years. God used him as my instrument. He didn't believe his own message. Yeah, I leave that penitentiary when I got drunk and do another 4-year bit. Couldn't have got in without him. God used the guy. We don't know when God's going to use us.
You don't even know who he's going to use this for, but you can be sure he's going to use this.
I joined Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting.
There's a big difference.
If I take this chair right here and put it in the chicken coop and I'm sitting in the chicken coop, ain't nobody going to say, look, there's a chicken. Well, to be a chicken, I got to do something. I can put this chair in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. That don't mean I joined AA. If I'm going to join AA, I got to do something. The first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous I walked into, I had an attitude problem. I was sitting in the back of the chair. I had a Jimmy Cagney all over my face. I was a tough guy. The guy got up to lead the meeting as I'm leading the meeting tonight, and he talked about alcoholism. Didn't it all talk about drunkenness? He talked about fear and pain and loneliness, and he talked about tears and self-pity. He talked about all the secrets that I had wrapped up inside my guts. He shared his experiences and his strengths, and he gave me back my hope. I'm telling you, I sat in that chair, 24 years old, 220 pounds, a mean convict, a frightened little child, inside, not knowing where I'm going to go or what I'm going to do, even while I'm here. I don't know why I went to AA. I tell you the truth. It's just the grace of God. It's the grace that God gave me to get here. Simple faith. Simple faith. I mean, you got to understand something. Why would I come to you guys if it wasn't for faith? Why? I never been to AA. I don't know nothing about AA. It's a simple faith that God gives me. And if he gives it to me, he gives it to you. God don't play favorites. Well, I'll give you this. He pays his workers well. But he don't play favorites. I don't mean a big faith that got me here. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a simple faith, a childlike faith. You know what I mean? When my little girl was 3 years old, she was at her birthday, she was running down the street and she fell down and skinned her knee. She laid out on that sidewalk screaming and crying and fussing. You know how women do. They go on and on and on and on. So I finally went out and I picked that little girl up and I kissed her knee. I just kissed her knee and she stopped crying. She had faith of a child. You know what? She didn't say, wait a minute, you got a license to practice medicine. You got Blue Cross or hospitalization or something. She just needed somebody who cared. Somebody to take time. Somebody to be interested in her. The faith of a child. She needed the touch of her father. And that's what I needed when I got here, the touch of my father who art in heaven. And I was okay too. And that's the touch she gave me my first meeting. The guy shared his experiences and his strengths and he gave me back my hope. I'm telling you, I physically felt the fire, the rekindling of the spirit. I felt the flicker of hope in my soul. I felt it. Yeah, yeah, that's it. That guy knows. That thought, that guy knows. He knows. He's got the answer. And when the meeting was over, I grabbed an ashtray and I emptied it. I was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous from my first meeting. I did something. I did something. And when the meeting was over, I knocked the tables down. I knocked the chairs down. In the next meeting, I set the tables up, and I set the chairs down, and I got coffee duty. And it wasn't like these pots over here. The coffee was in a 15-gallon soup pot across the yard at the officer's dining room. And I felt like that kung fu guy. I grabbed that big pot. I got my arms around that pot. I became that pot across the yard. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous then because I'm doing something, and I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous today because I'm doing something. I know how to stay sober. Get busy. And I'm not about to tell you. I'm not about to tell you that you can stay sober on ashtrays and coffee cups, but I am about to tell you that I bought enough time and unselfish acts and good works until I could work the steps. Yeah. No one gave me my first book. I didn't buy one. The library didn't rent them. How did I get my first book? You betcha. You betcha. You betcha. Guy walked in the room from the outside. He had that book in his hand. He put the book down. The boy was talking to some friends. Hey. Now I got the book. Got the book. I go back to my rack with that book, and I'm excited now. I got the book. This book that they've been talking about. The book, the book, the book. It's in the book. Read the book. It's in the book. The book, the book. I got the book. Open up the first page of the book, and the wall was running rampant, and I turned the page, and I forgot what I read. I totally forgot what I read. Turned the page back, and the guy was in some kind of cemetery, and I turned the page and forgot what I read. I wasn't getting this. Turn the page back, and a grenadier, and he's in a bye-bye pot or something. I turn the page, forgot what I read. What's this book? I've thrown my big book. I just don't make no sense. What are they saying here? What are they talking about? You see, the secret to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is in the jacket. I never read the jacket. At the very bottom of the jacket, on the cover of Alcoholics Anonymous, on the jacket, it says, this is a textbook. I thought the big book was recreational reading. I had no idea. I had absolutely no idea what they were saying to me in this textbook, because it needs to be studied. And if you don't grab what it says in the textbook, that's why they got sponsors. Usually you could call them tutors. You can call them interpreters. You can call them anything you want to call them. But that's the way it is. That's just the way it is. So if you're a new guy, and all you new guys, it's an amazing thing. The oldest four or five people in AA in this room were women. The youngest four or five were men. You don't last long in California. I can see right now. I better stay in Ohio. So if you're sitting in this room or any other room and you ain't got a big book and you ain't got enough money to buy one and ain't nobody gave you one and your pride's so great you can't mooch one, what should you do? What? But you get a job! Don't you dare steal no big book of Alcoholics Anonymous! You go down to McDonald's and get a job! What the hell? I heard a guy from the west side of Cleveland said with his little smart self, oh, steal a book, you can make amends later. From where? The penitentiary? Some beer joint? You get a job. This ain't the penitentiary. You can make money. You can buy one. See, God wants us to believe in Him. God will do anything He has to do for us to believe. I'm telling you, this is the story of my life. I ain't have no God. I ain't have nothing. I come in here frightening. I come in here tough guy. And I come in here all of that other stuff that had to go if I was going to stay. It had to go if I was going to stay. He does things for us that just are miracles. He performs miracle after miracle for us that He wants us to believe in Him. I mean, you got clubs here, huh? You ever sit in one of these clubs and a drunk runs in? I got a job, it's a miracle. I just walked in and God said, go there and hire me, I got a job. 2 million people a month get hired in the world, an alcoholic gets a job, it's a miracle. It's a miracle. And it is. I'm not discounting the miracle, I'm not at all. I'm getting a new job. I'm talking about the personal miracle that God performs to us. We feel it. We know it. This is a miracle. Hey, but there are some people, really, who don't get it. You know what I mean? Miracle. You're sober, you're worthless, sot, you can't stay sober, now you're sober, and you can't see the miracle. You can't see the miracle. I'm one of those guys. I couldn't get it. I didn't get it. Where does God see God could and would if he was sought? I got A down good, B down positively. But why? I got to get to God. I got to get to God. The prayer of sheer desperation opens the door. My road to God is paved with alcoholics. It's paved with people who share their personal adventures. It's paved with people who have proved to me that God could and would if they were sought. You know, many times you hear quoted, and it says, we tell our stories, what it was like, what happened. Yeah. But it also says, our personal adventures make clear those three pertinent ideas. And this personal adventure I'm giving you today had better make clear those three pertinent ideas. Because I'm the messenger. I ain't the message. I'm just the messenger. I never got it. You know, I didn't get it. I didn't get this power. I didn't quite understand it. It's, you know, if I could see it, touch it, and break it, I could believe it. But the book says we step from the bridge of reason to the shore of faith. I don't know exactly what that means. But I know for sure that somewhere I had to take a chance. And just going to an AA meeting was a chance, and I had to continue to take chances for a long time. For a long time. You ever hear this story? See, there's all kinds of these stories that convince you there is a God. There's all kinds of stories that convince you God to do things for you. Did you ever hear this about another guy like me? Didn't get it? Riding on a horse off the crucified, some Christians going to throw rocks at him and string him up and stuff, and God knocks him off the horse with a lightning bolt. Big miracle. We would all buy that one. We all look for it too, I think. Big miracle. That's the big one. God said, can we talk now? He got the guy's attention. Can we talk? You understand what I'm saying? Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Who's going to believe that story? Would you? I don't believe it. If it didn't happen to me, I wouldn't believe it. I go to the parole board. I'm there a year. I go there. They called me names. They said I was a detriment to the decent people of society. They had no alternative but to give me a nickel. 5 years. 5 years. I was devastated. I was devastated. I hadn't been in the hole. I had this program. I was doing things with my life I couldn't believe. The parole board said, you got anything to say for yourself? I said, I'm an AA. I'm an AA. I really had nothing else going for me. I'm an AA. He pressed the buzzer on the side of the thing and said, get this guy out of here. See, 1978 didn't carry the weight it carries in 92. It didn't carry it. They have court slips. You got court slips out here now? You know what them court slips are? Them court slips are the positive results of the members of Alcoholics Anonymous who paved the way before you came. That AA can take a piece of garbage and make it a decent, productive member of society. That's what those court slips are. Back in 70, they didn't give you a court slip, they gave you time. You don't like the court slip? A lot of these guys are resentful. I'll sign it myself. You don't like the court slip? Slap the judge in the mouth. That's the best advice I can give you. No court slip! No court slip! Just give them a good one. Give them a couple of them if you feel like it. I don't care. You won't get no court slip. That's right. Alcoholics Anonymous has proven that they can take people like me and make them a productive human being, a useful citizen. And that's why you get a court slip. Because people paved the way for guys like me. And at the same time, in the same token, not to get it off the track, but there are a lot of people in AA who don't like people with court slips. You don't like them? Quit helping drunks, because you proved AA works. Of course, you get drunk too, but your resentment will carry you through, and you'll be justified. Where the hell was I? Call it a court, the court, the judge, the parole board. Parole board, give me a nickel. I was shocked. I went back to my rack. I wanted to cry, really. If I wasn't such a he-man, I would have cried. I was just devastated. I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. I was just shocked. I was shocked. And I said my first prayer.
N-A-A.
You see, there's a second step, and it says, come to believe. We come to believe in the power, and here's how I come to believe, and it's just simple. Is that I got in a place where my power wasn't sufficient, wouldn't do no good, and I turned to the power of God. I just took a chance. I just took a chance. I did what you told me to do, God, and I said a prayer. And it was a prayer I opened this meeting with. God grant me the serenity. God will do every day. It is 5 years. I just don't want to drink anymore. I just don't want to drink anymore. I'm guilty of everything they said and a whole bunch of stuff they don't even know about. I just don't want to drink anymore. You see, I'm in AA because I don't want to drink anymore. That's the bottom line, too. If you take away that desire, and I'm history, everything you've ever taught me, everything I've ever learned is useless information if I drink again. But if all I settle for that, I cheat myself. If I could have made a list that day of what I wanted from God and Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd have cheated myself in the first 3 months. In the first 2 years, I'd have been ran out and God was still given. I had no idea what AA has to offer a guy like me. I said that prayer and big time miracle. They called me back to the parole board 20 minutes after I got done praying. God, see, you just can't do that. It's a miracle maybe you don't understand, but it's just one of those things you just don't go see the board twice in a day, twice in an hour. I mean, they're busy people. There's a lot of us. And here in L.A., you'll have a lot more this month. I said this prayer. They called me back to the board. They sat me down in the chair and said, we changed our mind. That doesn't make any sense. I don't get that. They said, we changed our mind. We're only going to give you 3 years instead of five. And I went back to my rank and I tried to turn that around and try to look that around and try to figure it out. Now I'll tell you something. Here's this. If I would have done this, the reduction of sentence would make sense. If I would have done this, see, I'm not a buyer, I'm a threatener. I understand your house is going to burn down next week, and I'm so sorry to hear that, if I don't get a reduction in my sentence. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's how I'm an intimidator, so to speak. You know what I mean? I went back to my rack after the second time to the board, and I realized something, that I hadn't done anything to influence the parole board except pray. God wants me to believe in Him. He'll knock the guy off the horse, He'll give you a job, and He'll let me know that He hears my prayers, and all I got to do is ask. All I got to do is ask. God could and would if He was sought. I sought Him with a simple prayer, and He gave me a magnificent, magnificent answer. An answer I couldn't deny that was divine. I did another year in that penitentiary, and in that year I got busy. In that year I started a group. I was secretary of a group. I started a discussion. I made 12-step calls against all humiliation and embarrassment. I'm not even going to ask if there are any convicts in this room. I should ask how many, but I won't. But I won't. But you know as well as I do in any society that if you start to do something that's different from the rest of society, you're ostracized. You're taken to the cleaners. You're laughed at and you're made fun of. And I knew this, that I said a prayer and I got an answer and they told me if I wanted to keep it, I had to give it away. And if you want to laugh at that, you go ahead. But I don't want to drink no more and I found a power. I've tapped into a power and that's what I'm going to do. A year after I got that 5 years, we reduced that. And three, big miracle, big miracle. And you know, you hear these stories for centuries and you don't believe them. Did you ever hear this story about the guy that was chained down in prison, or an apostle or disciple or something? He's laying down there chained up. He got a guard on this side, a guard on that side. Both of them are armed. An angel comes down and says, hey, get out of here. Comes down to the cell, comes down to the prison, tells the guy, get out. The guy says, can't you see the condition I'm in here? And the chains fell off, and he stood up, and the guards didn't wake up. He went over to the door, and the door opened up, and he walked out the door, and he went off and helped all kinds of people, wrote all kinds of stuff. Now, you don't believe that story? You don't believe that story? You don't believe it? I don't believe it either if it didn't happen to me. If it didn't happen to me, God come down and say, hey, get out of here. I said, can't you see the condition I'm in? They brought me back to court. The judge says, you know what, Melly, we changed your mind. We're going to let you go home. I thought it was a trap. No, really. Remember I told you you're held captive? I was held captive by fear and pride and resentment and all the things that the book says we have to get rid of. I was held captive by those things long after alcoholism was not my problem. After drunkenness was not my problem. It didn't make sense to me. I'm getting my coat on. I figured some kind of trick. You know, the cops, they remembered all I did to them, and I told you why I was there and all of that stuff, and they didn't have computers, so it was not a computer error. I just figured this was, they were going to get me out, and when I got that first breath of fresh air, they were going to come and grab me and laugh. And they wanted to see me cry, and they wanted to break the spirit. You break the spirit of the man, you've broken the man, and that's how simple it is. And this is what was going through my mind as I turned the collar up on my coat and pulled the brim down on my hat and dashed out to my car, you know? See, I'd spent a long time, preteen even, as part of the justice system. And I'll tell you something, once you join Alcoholics Anonymous, you become part of the mercy system, and God can do things for you that no one else can, that a lawyer can't, that bondsman can't, that money can't, that nothing can. God can do those things. He can open up hearts. He can open up minds. He can close eyes. He can open up ears. He can do anything. He can do anything. And He proved to me, just proved to me that there is a God and He loves me. He's going to do anything He has to do in order for me to do it. And here's the deal. The deal is this, and this is the deal I made with God. If you keep me sober, I'll tell everybody how I did it. That's the deal I made with God. You do what you can do that I can't do, and I'll do what I can do that I can do. And that's what I'm doing. That's all I'm doing here is what I can do. And I'm telling you how it happened. God could and would if He was sought. And I sought Him, and I seek Him today, and He can, and He does. And that's the message. And really, what could be simpler than that? What could be simpler than that? I got out of that penitentiary, and I went back home, and I tell you, fear just run my life. Fear just run my life. I knew it was a trap. I knew it was some kind of a trick. I just knew it. I sat in my house and the sun went down and I got hungry and I sat in my house. I was waiting for Him to come to the door, waiting for Him to get me, just waiting for Him, just sick with it. Just sick with it. I waited for somebody to yell lights out or a bedtime or chow or something. I just sat in that chair, just absolutely terrified in that chair. Jesus, get it over with. I don't want to be here. Man, let me just see. You know what I'm saying here? It's just insane thinking. Guy that can't stay sober on that stuff, you can't stay sober living with that kind of fear. You just can't. I snuck out of the house at 3 o'clock in the morning, went down to a restaurant with my back against the wall, and I ate the meal with a spoon. I hadn't had a knife and a fork in years. I just ate the meal with a spoon like a dog looking like this, and nobody ate my food. I went home and sat in that chair, and 10 o'clock the Saturday morning, there was a pound on the door, and I said, man, it's over with. Let me just get back. Let me do the time. I only got a couple more years. Let me get it over. I opened up the door, and you know who's standing at the door? You're standing at the door. You members of Alcoholics Anonymous got the scuttle that I was out of, and you're standing at the door. I said, come on, we're going to go to a meeting. We're going to go to a meeting. We're going to go to a meeting. What I owe you? What I owe you for carrying the message down that penitentiary? What I owe you for catching me on that Saturday morning before whiskey did? What I owe you? What I owe you for the love and the trust and the faith? What do you want me to do? Do you want me to go? You want me to lead some meetings? I'll lead some meetings. You want me to say some prayers? I'll say some prayers. You want me to help some drunks? I'll help some drunks. What do you want me to do? I'll do it. What I owe you? What I owe you? Well, I know one thing for sure. I got what I don't deserve. I got what I don't deserve. I don't deserve what I got today. I've been on the take since I joined Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been taking and sucking this program dry for years. I mean, it don't make no sense. Sit in a meeting for an hour and stay sober for 24. Come on, give me a break. Give me a break. That don't add up. I'm still on the take in AA. I'm still on the take, and I realized it some years ago. I realized that it don't make sense what I'm doing. So I was the guy who was going to get even with God. I was the guy who wasn't going to be on the take no more. I'm going to get even. I started sponsoring lots of guys. 6, 8, 10, 12 guys at a time. I bought a school bus for the mentally retarded. For the mentally retarded. Filled it up with drunks. I thought that was appropriate. Took them down to the penitentiary, from down to Grafton Prison, from down to Stella Maris, and out to 6 and 8 and 10 meetings a week. I was the guy to do that. And then it dawned on me this.
I cannot outdo the grace of God. Everything I put in Alcoholics Anonymous, God gives me back, and He never gives me one for one. He gives me back 100-fold, even 1,000-fold sometimes. Everything I do in AA, I get back 1,000 times. That means the more I do, the more people I help, the more I pray, the more places I go, the more drunks that I help, the more I give, God gives me back 3 times, 5 times, 100 times as much. The more I give, the deeper in debt I get. I quit trying to get even with God. I just make payments. Just make payments. I got out of that joint. And I didn't know what to do. You know, I didn't know what to do. I wanted to go to these meetings. I was so frightened. I was standing at the top of the stairs, and I, you ain't going down there. You don't want to shake your hand. I don't want to shake your hand. You better go down. I don't want to go. If I go down, they're going. I better go down. If you don't go down, you're going to get drunk and you go down. I said, that's all. Okay, well, I'm going to get drunk. I don't want to get drunk, and that's how simple it is. The sponsor helps out on these occasions, but you got to get one. You got to get one. Home groups are marvelous, but you got to get one. I was out about 2 weeks, and I was driving around. Of course, I wondered what you people had. I just didn't know what to do. I was so comfortable in the penitentiary. I can only tell you that. I was so comfortable. I was so safe and so secure. I didn't have no gas bill. I didn't have nobody nagging. I didn't have no pressure. I didn't have nothing. You have nothing. It's time to grow. It's always time to grow. When these difficulties come on me, it's time to grow. It's time to grow. I was driving down the street thinking to myself, I can't do nothing, I can't make these calls, I can't shake hands, I can't do nothing, and I was zipping around the corner, and I was in a real hurry, I had absolutely nowhere to go, in a hurry to get there, zipped around the corner, and there's an old lady in the middle of the street, almost ran over. I just zigzagged my car, get down around her, and you know what dawned on me? About 5 houses down the street, her and a young kid, they were carrying a mattress across the street from house to house, you know? And I almost ran them over, and I got down about 5 houses, you know, I said to myself, I can do that. I can carry that mattress. Then I slammed the brakes on and threw that car in reverse and jumped out of the car and ran over. They threw the mattress down and they ran away. They thought I was going to beat them up for blocking the street. I picked that big sucker up and I carried that mattress up the stairs and around the bed, and man, I had a smile on my face from ear to ear, because I don't know exactly where it is, but somewhere inside me, there's a place that where you do good, you feel good. I don't know where that is, but there's a place when those two things meet, doing good and feeling good, you get one of these smiles on your face, and that's just how I felt. Man, I felt great. I told that lady, I said, I'm an AA, you know? She didn't know what she had in her house. You know what I'm saying? You people told me from the very conception of Alcoholics Anonymous that if I wanted to keep it, I had to give it away. From the very beginning, you told me that the greatest thing I can do to serve God and humanity is to help a drunk. You told me that. And I had no other reason for good acts. I had no other reason for anything I was doing decent in my life except that. Except they'll sin. Is that the greatest thing I can do to serve God and humanity is to help a drunk. And when that lady said to me, how can I ever thank you? And she reached for her pocketbook. I said, all you got to do is help a drunk, honey. That's all you got to do is just help a drunk. I had nothing else. I knew nothing else, and that works well. That's a good door to walk through in the beginning. God couldn't. What if he were sus? What are we looking at? Couple minutes? Are we okay with a couple minutes? Okay. All right. Don't waste my time with that. You know, I got out of that penitentiary, and I got out on the street, and I was out of that. I got out on a Friday and a Saturday. They took me to a meeting on the west side, which I already told you I wasn't fine about. And because every time I went to the west side, somebody wanted to beat me up. I have no idea why that always was, but I always said, come on with that. Come on with that. Let's see what we can do. I go over to the west side. It's a meeting. I'm on the west side. The guy's leading. He's a congressman or a senator or something. He gets a lawyer. He gets up and says, I'm an alcoholic. I said, he's a liar. That guy's a liar. He ain't. I wouldn't know an alcoholic if he'd hit me with the room. But all I know is that guy got up and talked about my pain. And that's the difference. That's the leveler. That's the thing that brings us all together. The pain of our suffering and the joy of our recovery. Those two things are the things that keeps us alive in Alcoholics Anonymous. It has nothing to do with activity. It has nothing to do with that. It's those two things. As I read the big book,
Fellowship, very important. Meetings, apps.
Absolutely.
12 steps, you can't stay sober without them if you're a real alcoholic. You're a real alcoholic. I go to a meeting on a Monday and it's a businessman's lunch and I'm out of place. They got suits and sport coats, bell-bottom pants came in while I was out. I had a shirt they gave me from the penitentiary, a pair of pants I had to wrap around because I lost so much weight and my alligator shoes, my gangster shoes with the points and the suede. And I walk into this meeting and I froze. There were 200 businessmen in that meeting. I mean, real business, not monkey business, real businessmen in that meeting. And I absolutely froze and I felt the fear start in me. And the funny thing about fear is I don't have enough humility nor enough faith to say, you know, I'm feeling a little frightened. I have a problem. I could we talk about this? What I do is I go into Jimmy Cagney. That's just what I do. I get a little, stop. Take my chair. Go sit in the back of the room and I dare you to come and talk to me. See, I just dare you to come and talk to me. You know what I mean? Really. And I say the biggest, meanest, baddest guys in the room coming through the door today are the most frightened. And I only say that from my own experience. And I sat in that chair like a frightened little child looking like a mean, mean man. And a guy walked up to me who was about this tall. He grabbed my hand and he said, How you doing? I said, get away. And I said it then. I had a filthy mouth because I had a filthy mind. If you want to know what's in your mind, listen to what comes out of your mouth. Guy didn't hear me. He didn't hear me tell him to get away from me. He just kept pumping my hand. How long you sober? I didn't know how long. I know you were supposed to keep track. Didn't dawn on me. Then I said a while. Oh, he said, what's your home group? I said, I just got out of the walls, man. Oh, he said, you're from the walls group. Oh, that's just great. See, I believe that God closed his eyes so he couldn't see how I was dressed. I believe God closed his ears so he couldn't hear what I was saying, and he just welcomed me. He said, you come out with me, he said, I'll introduce you to everybody in the whole room, and I'll buy you lunch. I'm a pushover for the free one. If you're buying, I'm going. You know what I mean? And everybody shook my hand, and everybody welcomed me. Easy does it. Keep coming back first thing first. One day at a time, they're shooting all of this stuff at me, and I kind of got the idea this was a scam. Kind of got first meeting, really. The first one was an anniversary. This is my first real meeting of AA. I figured it's some kind of scam like the pyramid group. You know what I mean? You're going to shake my hand and you want to buy this. I had my hand on my wallet, so you couldn't get my wallet. Now, that's a joke. I've been making 6 cents an hour for the past 2 years. Right? You follow me? I got back from that meeting, and I sat in my chair in my living room, and I got out of my chair and looked at me to see what in the world it was you were going to scam me for. What could you take from me? I didn't have. What did you see that I didn't know? What could you possibly want from me? Now, there's a lot of new people in this room, and I'm going to tell you, I stayed sober long enough to find out what the scam is. I know what they want from you. They want to take my pain. They want to take my tears. They want to take my loneliness. That's what they want from me. And they want to slap one of them great big smiles on my kisser so that I can walk around and say, easy does it, first things first, and then you come back and all that other crap. That's what they want from me. They want my pain. You betcha. I'd like to tell you a little bit about today. 21 years sober, but you wouldn't believe it. You wouldn't believe it. It's beyond anything I could ever imagine I could ever understand in my life. It's you know what I'm saying? It's so hard. It's so hard to say, here's what I was, and here's what happened, and listen to this. Because you don't believe it. Even I don't believe it. All right. One story. I was 61, really, just one story. I got a job offer. Can you believe this? Stuff? You can't believe this, folks.
I get a job offer. They offer me a job making almost 2.5 times the salary I make this week. I mean, big money. Big money. Really big money. I bet I'll never lead another conference. Chances are I'll never lead another meeting. Speak at a meeting. Speak at a conference of this. I sat down with my kids and I said, here's the deal. We're going to have more money than we can ever spend at one time. We're going to have all meat every day and clothes and all the stuff. And, well, what do you think? And I told them the option is that I could never do this. And my oldest, my son says, well, why don't you talk to your sponsor? Why don't you talk to the AA? And my middle daughter says, and she's 14 with long hair and legs up to her neck, and I ain't bringing her to California, and she said, go for the gold, you know. And my 12-year-old, you know, my 12-year-old, my little problem child, you know, my 12-year-old, my baby. She said, well, what are you going to do about all of those drunks today? I ain't going to believe it anyhow. So it doesn't really matter, but as you know, I'm here today. So I didn't take the job, and it's just that simple. There was a little girl that went to Europe, and while she was in Europe, she visited all the cathedrals, and as she was going through the cathedrals, she asked the guide who the people were on the stained glass windows of those cathedrals, and the guy told her that those was the saints. And when she got home and everybody asked that little girl what she'd seen while she was in Europe, she says, I've seen the saints. And when they asked her who the saints were in her innocence, this little girl said, well, the saints are the ones that let the light in. And I say this to you in my innocence, and man, I got it. New people in this room and Alcoholics Anonymous throughout, and particularly at the Newberg Group, let the light in for me. All that I have and all that I am and all that I have ever hoped to be, I got from you people 21 years, 10 months, and 3 days ago. Thank you, and God bless you.